Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what two key issues were present in Nazi ideology from the very beginning? Jesús Casquete is a professor of the history of social and political movements and thought at the University of the Basque Country in Spain, and fellow at the Research Center on Anti-Semitism in Berlin. After doing postgraduate studies at the New School for Social Research in New York, he's worked as a researcher or visiting professor at Humboldt University in Berlin and Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich, with grants from the Alexander von Humboldt Foundation, as well as at the Institute of Philosophy of the Spanish National Research Council. He's written several books about the social and cultural role of grassroots political movements, and recently presented his latest book, Nazis a pie de calle, or Nazis at Street Level, at the Centro Sefarad Israel. This book deals with the rise of the SA, or Nazi paramilitary organization, in the early 1920s. While it's an extremely well-documented book, and even includes previously unpublished material, it has a unique structure that makes it appealing to the general public. Dr. Casquete spoke with us about the SA assault troops and his book. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. You are presenting a book called Nazis a pie de calle, which sort of means Nazis at street level. And this is about the founding of the SA assault troops, right? They were founded in 1920, which was really right after World War I. Can you give us the reasons?
Yeah, I'm glad to be here with you today. Yeah, the reason the Nazi movement was founded in Munich. At that point, there was very turbulent era. So its political party, its political movement, disposed of their own paramilitary troops. And their function was to protect their political activities, the meetings.
So there was more than one group like this?
There was more than one group than that. Almost every political movement had their own paramilitary troops or their own safety troops for their own political meetings. The Nazis had their own, were the assault troops. And the Social Democrats had their own, the Communists had their own. And there was even a Jewish group in Munich which also had their own paramilitary troops for this function, protecting the political meetings.
Which means that there was the danger of violence at political meetings, obviously.
And of course, it was an everyday practice to split their political meetings of the enemies. They were called such enemies, not adversaries, but enemies. And it was a common practice. Belonged to the everyday.
This was a time of the Weimar Republic, which was supposedly a republic and supposedly democratic. How did it give rise to this kind of movement? What was the political context?
The political context is very straightforward. It was right after the First World War, and the old order was gone. The Kaiser, the Emperor, was gone. And it was the first democratic experience in Germany. Political activities of all sorts. There was a revolutionary experiment in all over Germany, but one of the most important experiments took place in Munich with workers and soldiers councils, republic. And so there was an attempt to found soldiers and workers.
A republic made of different...
Yeah, of a very leftist orientation. So in imitation of the Russian Revolution. And it was a very turbulent era with different worldviews in front of each other. and defending the views, the political views, by violent means. And the assault troops were very active in this respect. They were the paramilitary troops of the Nazi movement.
So how did the, let's say, central government, the Republic itself, react to all of this?
Well, in there wasn't a central government in the sense we understand it today, because Germany was a kind of federal country. So there was Prussia in the north, Bavaria in the south, and there were certain regions. And they all had their own government, their own police forces. It wasn't called a federal state, but they didn't have much to do with each other in this respect. So they had different governments. And the government in Bavaria there was a republic, council republic, leftist one, and they had a different government completely different orientation. It was more conservative, nationalist orientation, anti-Semitic orientation, and that's the body in which nationalists grew up.
So the regional, if you want to call them that, governments just kind of looked the other way when there were all these political parties with their violence.
It was right after the First World War, and the political order was like a crisis era. The old order was gone, and the new one was still coming. So there was a liminal era. So the new wasn't still born, and the old was not yet gone. And there was much room for political movements trying to put forward their views and to implement the views.
So were most of these movements either extreme right or extreme left, would you say?
They were extreme right, nationalists most of all, and Bavaria was the most nationalist, was called at the time El Dorado, of the nationalist spectrum in Germany. Nationalist spectrum in Germany means ultra-nationalist, means anti-Semitic, means anti-feminist, anti-pacifist, anti-liberal, anti-democratic. And on the other hand, there was a leftist movement represented by the left wing of the Social Democratic Party and then by the communist.
What percentage do you think of the general population was involved in this, and how did the general population react to these extreme movements?
At the point the assault troops were born, they were a tiny movement. At the beginning, they were a tiny movement. They grew up with time, but they were a handful of people. Many of them were former soldiers who took part in the First World War. And they had the habits, the mental habits and the practices of the inherited from the military, and they exported these habits to their civil life. So they were used to use violence in order to defend their views and to put forward their views.
So then did the public in general just kind of think, well, these are some crazies, and they...
Well, it wasn't that easy. Because there were a few people who were very ultra-nationalist and very strong anti-Semitic views, but they have a kind of social martyrs. Many of them sympathized with them and said, well, they felt that Germany was in danger, and that the responsibles of this danger were the leftists, the Marxists, Social Democrats and the Communists, and they felt the necessity to defend the fatherland, the motherland. You say it in English, the motherland. Huh? It's feminine in English. In Germany, it's masculine. And they felt that the motherland was in danger, and they had to defend it against their enemies. And there were two kinds of enemies, the political enemies, the Communists and the Social Democrats, and the label of Marxist, and then the racial enemies, and these were the Jews.
What was the relationship, if any, between this movement, the Nazi movement at the beginning in the 20s, and other fascist movements in Europe that were kind of growing up at the same time?
Well, you mean the organic relationships between them, or...?
Did they have any kind of communication?
Well, the fascist movements spread all over Europe at this time. In Italy, in 1922, Mussolini became a prime minister, in Italy, in many other countries, there were fascist movements were spreading. It was kind of part of the climate of the era, And then the relationship between the two most important fascist movements at the time, which were the Italian and the German, they became closer. So in 22, Mussolini got to power. And the 1 year thereafter, in 23, November 23, Hitler attempted to take over power by violent means, by attempting a coup d'etat.
Let's talk about the book. What documentation did you use? Because some of it was previously unpublished, and I was wondering what these documents were and how you found them.
How long were?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm doing this. I've conducted this this study at the street level, but also the archive level. I have been extensively reading primary sources, writings by the Nazis, books, leaflets, journals, magazines, and I'm coming from the social sciences. I'm a sociologist by training. And now I'm doing historical research. But I'm posing sociological questions to historical materials. So I do have a very different perspective. So there are thousands and thousands of books and articles on Nazi socialism. It's hard to believe that there are still some new findings to be done, but there are still some documents. If you approach them with different questions and with a different perspective, you do find new materials, and that's what I try to do by visiting different archives, most of all in Berlin and in Munich, but also libraries in Leipzig and documentation centers in different parts of Germany. There are still some new materials to be found. And
did you run into any difficulty while you were doing your research?
Which kind of difficulties?
Well, either from difficulty in getting access to the archives or anything?
Not at all. No. No, just the opposite. I think I'm pretty sure that in Germany, all researchers from all over the world are welcomed if they want to do research on National Socialism. It's not a problem at all. Just the opposite. They are welcome. We are welcome.
You've called this book Una Historia en Historias, and since the word historia in Spanish has two meanings, I'm wondering if you mean a history in stories?
I think that's the correct translation of getting my idea. Yeah, I haven't done in a conventional history, so starting from the beginning and then following a chronological order and analyzing or who became the general secretary, you call it, of the OSA. I rather took a different approach, so pick up different aspects which were important to me in order to better understand how this group of people started as a tiny group in Munich and became a huge movement with hundreds of thousands of militants. And one example is the story of the bars where these people met and hold their meetings and so on. So there's hardly a research on this issue, but they were very important. So that's a story. And my book is a collection of stories dealing with different issues which are important to me in order to understand these paramilitary troops, such as their insurance they had, and their gender vision, their different myths which were important in their development, and the issue of anti-Semitism. But taking together all these stories make a broader view of these paramilitary troops, assault troops.
Can you tell us about the anti-Semitism specifically?
Yeah, anti-Semitism was a key issue in the Nazi ideology, so it was very present from the very beginning. As a matter of fact, at the beginning when Hitler started giving shape to the movement, they were like two very big issues which were overpresent in the discourse, in his discourses, in their articles in the press, which were the Treaty of Versailles, so-called betrayal of the Versailles Treaty, and anti-Semitism. So Jews were guilty for all the dissolution of the national essences. So the Jews were made guilty for every problem Germany was at the moment.
What about their attitude towards women?
Well, in this respect, they were pretty conventional compared to this fascist movement present all over Europe and with a conservative view. So and this is a very symptomatic feature or insight how the Nazis treated the gender issue. So Hitler, and he theorized it. So it wasn't something reflexive. He wrote about it, and he said it specifically. When I hold a meeting, and when I approach a public, I started by saying, not ladies and gentlemen, as is usual in every language, from French, English, German, Spanish, but the other way around, by addressing first men and then the woman. So there, implicit in this view is a very conservative and very ancestral view of women as human beings who belong to the private sphere. Home, children, and that was it. And for men was reserved the public sphere, the politics and defense. This was a very conventional view, not just specific of the Nazis.
Is there any plan to translate the book into English?
Not yet. Do you have an idea? I would welcome any idea.
Aye.
I would like to.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
No, I think we covered very important issues, and I thank you for your interview.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.